Adventure Box Max presents Mermaids in Peril, written by Linda Brisson, illustrated by Pierre Thies. Chapter 1, The Quartz Arch.
How about we go mess around at the arch?
Before I can answer, my cousin Romy grabs my hand and joyfully drags me to the middle of the rocks covered with anemones. Ever since I arrived at the South Seas a few days ago, Romy has been going all out to cheer me up. First, she helped me make the woven seaweed top that I'm wearing at the moment. Now we're going to the Quartz Arch, the spot where mermaids our age meet up to have fun. Despite my cousin's enthusiasm, I still don't feel relaxed and comfortable. I miss my parents and my friends so much. I live several hundred kilometres away from here, in the North Seas. Dad and Mum sent me here to stay with my aunt for a while because a new disease has taken hold in our area, oleum disease. It's caused by pollution that's deposited in the sea and mainly affects young mermaids. It slowly paralyzes the muscles up to the heart. Obviously, it's got everyone nervous. But here, though, oleum disease doesn't exist. The sea is undoubtedly cleaner. Romy doesn't feel anxious the way I do. A few minutes later, we arrive at the Quartz Arch. How gorgeous it is! The arch is just under the water's surface, and the sun's rays make the rock's pink quartz sparkle. It's stunning. All around, mermaids are darting about. They're swimming under the arch, speeding back up to the surface, jumping out of the water and over the arch, then diving back in on the other side. I'm not sure if I'm brave enough to try. All of a sudden, a triton heads our way. He calls out to my cousin, "Hi, Romy! Did you see my big jump? My dive was magnificent!" Remy sniggers and makes fun of him.
"No, Vic, I didn't have the good fortune to."
My cousin then introduces us.
"Vic, this is my cousin Stella, and Stella, this is Vic, my friend, and he's got the biggest head of anyone I know."
Vic shrugs and retorts,
"What can I say? Some of us are just gifted."
This Vic seems very arrogant. I notice grey patterns on his upper body. I'm a bit fazed by them. He takes note of my surprise and, patting the tattoos on one arm with the other hand, he boasts,
"Did you see? Stylish, eh?"
Frowning, I ask him, "Are those real tattoos?"
"Sure they are," he insists. "I'm not the sort to do things by halves."
Romy is right. This Vic is a real show-off. He even annoys me a bit. I can't understand how he can be friends with my cousin. Remy turns to me and suggests excitedly,
"What if we tried the arch dive too?"
I'm not very keen, and I announce, "Go ahead if you like, but I don't think that I'm going to try."
"Are you chicken?"
Vic laughs. He's seriously irritating. Remy answers back,
"Vic, everyone can do what they like. I'm going first, and Stella, maybe you'll change your mind after you see me dive."
As Romy begins to move her tail, she cries out in pain.
"Ow!"
I ask her right away, "What's the matter?"
"I have a cramp in my fin,"
she replies, pulling her face. I wait for her to change her mind about diving, but she then says,
"It's nothing. It'll probably pass as I swim."
And off she goes towards the arch. I watch her swimming away. She is struggling, and yet she keeps on going, but she's not very fast. At this speed, she'll never be able to jump over the arch. I worry about her. Just as she jumps, her body contracts and she drops back into the water like a stone. Vic and I race towards her. Romy's face is tensed up with pain. She explains, almost sobbing,
"I don't know what's happening. It feels like my fin is paralyzed."
When she says the final word, my eyes open wide in fear. What if it's oleum disease?
Chapter 2, Save Romy.
It's dreadful. The healer has just confirmed the diagnosis. Romy has oleum disease. Her muscles are slowly becoming paralysed. We've stretched my cousin out on a moss mat. When I come near her, I can see how distressed she is. I take her hand and ask how she feels. In a weak voice, she murmurs, "The healer gave me something to calm the pain, so I'm kind of okay. But I can no longer feel the lower half of my body." I try to smile. "You'll be better tomorrow." I know I'm lying to her, but I don't have the courage to face reality. There's a lump in my throat and I feel drained. I join Vic, who's frozen on the spot a few metres away.
"Is it a contagious disease?" he asks me.
I reply, as if reciting a lesson learned by heart. "No, it's transmitted by pollution in the water. It causes paralysis of the body." I feel shattered. Vic frowns. He seems to be thinking hard before he declares,
"I might know a cure."
I roll my eyes almost angrily. "What are you talking about? If there was one, people would know. Romy's life is on the line, so stop showing off." Vic sighs and stutters.
"I care for Romy too, and I'm not boasting. I really think there is a remedy. Over here, we don't talk too much about oleum disease, so I hadn't made the connection. But this symptom reminds me of something. About 2 years ago, I got sick after going on holiday. It started with a fin becoming paralysed, like Romy, and then it spread to my whole body. My mother made me chew bits of a seaweed that she had picked up during one of her expeditions, and it healed me."
I can't believe it. Vic's mother may have found the remedy. But why didn't she share her discovery? I ask. Vic suddenly looks at me sadly. He murmurs a reply.
"My mother was a scientist who studied plants. When I fell ill, no one knew about this disease. She kept on researching on her own. But one day she was seriously injured during an exploration trip. She died shortly afterwards. My father and I left the refuge where she grew all her plants. I never went back there."
A silence falls between us. Then I say, "I'm sorry about your mother, Vic. We have to go to her refuge, though. Maybe the cure is still there." Vic leads me to a small, dark grotto. He swims to the top of the cavern and plucks away seaweed blocking the entrance. Now sunlight can get inside. I look around me. All sorts of shelves, carved and sharpened for cutting plants, hang on the rocky walls. Big tortoise shells that must have held all kinds of plants are stacked underneath. They're now empty. No plants have survived. I sigh in despair. Is there still a way to find the remedy? I ask Vic, "Do you know where your mother discovered the seaweed that cured you?" He shrugs and replies,
"No, but she noted everything down on Mother of Pearl tablets. If we can find them..."
Vic and I search every nook and cranny of the grotto, and in the hollow of one alcove, I finally spot a few round seaweeds. Tucked among them, I find a pile of mother-of-pearl tablets. I hold my discovery out to Vic, who cautiously takes out the tablets engraved by his mother. On each of them are dates and sketches. Finally, Vic announces,
"It's this one!"
I pore over the tablet and read, "Hedalia." Vic smiles.
"She gave it her own name. My mother was called Hedda."
Hedda had sketched the seaweed. Underneath, she noted a description. I read out loud, "Flat seaweed, pink in colour, rolled up like a fan, edged with short hairs. The flesh of Hedalia is notable for curing paralysis." that's exactly the seaweed that we need. But where can we find it? On the following tablet, a map appears. Look here, I say excitedly. She's indicated the spot where she discovered her dahlia. With one finger, Vic traces the route.
It's in a grotto that she called the Black Grotto, he declares. In the Great Waters.
The Great Waters. They're not very far from here, but we're not allowed to go there. It's a fishing area for humans. But Romy is in danger. Vic looks straight into my eyes. Then, as if he's read my thoughts, he says,
If we leave now, we can be back before sunset.
I reply straight away. Then we have no time to lose. We have to find Hedalia. We have to save Romy.
Chapter 3. Towards the Black Grotto.
Vic has gathered, in the hollow of one round seaweed, the tablets about Hedalia, as well as a few tools. The bundle hangs from his waist with the help of a strap. Once he's ready, he explains where we're going while pointing at a map.
We have to cross the Gulf Stream in the east, and once we're out of the stream, we have to keep going up to the Fiery Peak.
His worried face brightens.
See? Easy!
He crows. He really never stops showing off. Maybe that's his way of hiding his feelings. But it's brave of him to go exploring, following his mother's trail. And thanks to him and Aheda's research, we can hold on to a sliver of hope for Romy. Swimming east requires a bit of effort because the Gulf Stream flows north. Soon we reach the stony scales, tall rock faces scattered over a wide stretch of the ocean that form a natural barrier between the Gulf Stream and the Great Waters. Just as I'm about to enter this zone, Vic holds me back. He points and murmurs, Careful. A little higher up, I spot dozens of jellyfish. Vic tells me something I already know.
Those are box jellyfish. Their stings can be fatal.
I try not to show the fear that invades me. Vic seems so confident. We swim as quietly as possible, hoping the jellyfish won't notice our presence. We still have a few meters to go when suddenly I notice a few jellyfish just below us. Contracting their umbrellas, they rise up quickly in our direction. Vic and I give it all we've got and race as fast as we can. And just as one of the creatures gets close, we slip between two rocky walls. At that moment, it suddenly feels cold. We've reached the Great Waters. I breathe a sigh of relief, even if we're now in a forbidden area. I suddenly feel tiny in this unknown territory where I'm not supposed to be. After a few long minutes, we see the Fiery Peak. It's a rocky peak covered with reddish seaweeds. Now we have to descend deeper. The map indicates that we have to cross Varech Forest. The Black Grotto is just below. I'm not looking forward to diving down into the darkness. I go back up to the surface for a moment to calm down a bit. Nearby, I see a mountainous island. The sun is shining brightly. Vic pokes his head out of the water too and exclaims,
Ready to explore the depths?
Then he places one hand on my shoulder and adds,
Let's go, for Romy.
There's a lump in my throat and I nod without saying a word. Together we dive towards the Black Grotto. A few meters down, Varech Forest appears. It's an enormous seaweed forest, thick and dark, with wide brown strips waving in the current. It separates the creatures of the light from the creatures of the darkness. And as we penetrate the forest, the obscurity thickens. Feeling anxious, I ask, How are we going to continue? We can't see anything anymore. Vic replies casually.
Don't worry, I planned ahead.
Before he can explain, a cloud of bluish light glows in front of me. Vic is ecstatic.
Fantastic! The deep water prawn! That wasn't part of my plan.
I smile. With a bit of luck, there'll be some more prawns hidden in the seaweed. When these crustaceans feel like they're in danger, they spit out a substance that creates light for a few seconds. That gives me an idea. I plunge into the seaweed and wiggle about, hoping to disturb some prawns. Jackpot! Blue light shines all around me. It's beautiful, even magical. Vic congratulates me and does the same. In the middle of these bursts of light, we briefly forget our worries. But all of a sudden, we reach the end of Varech Forest and find ourselves alone in the ocean depths, in absolute darkness. In the pitch black, I freeze. I hear Vic next to me fiddling with something. Now what? I ask him. At that moment, a halo of light forms near me. Vic triumphantly holds a closed shell pierced with small holes in which glowworms are wiggling about. This time, I'm the one congratulating him. He really has thought of everything. I've only known him for a few hours, and now I can understand what my cousin likes about him. He's a loyal friend that can be counted on. Enthusiastically, I exclaim, "Let the exploration begin!" We find the entrance of the grotto easily, but as I face this gloomy cavern, I don't feel very confident. The rocks around the opening look like sharp teeth inside a mouth ready to swallow us up. On either side, long, thin seaweeds grow, several meters tall. Vic swims inside the grotto, then turns around and says to me mischievously,
"Are you chicken? You know the proverb. Chicken one day, chicken forever."
He's still really annoying. Feeling irritated, I retort, "Not at all. I'm not scared. But I just don't feel like getting lost if this place turns out to be a maze." I pick a handful of the long seaweeds called Himanthalia and begin to attach one strip to the grotto's entrance. I explain to Vic that we need to tie the Himanthalia together to form a guide rope that will help us find our way back out again.
"That's not bad," Vic admits.
At least he knows a good idea when he sees one. I feel proud of myself.
Chapter 4. The Search for Hedalia.
We slowly enter the grotto. It isn't very wide. Thanks to Vic's lit-up shell, we can inspect both sides of the cave. There are no traces of plants on the rock. "Do we know exactly what we're looking for?" I ask Vic. Vic dips his hand into his bundle and takes out Hedda's tablets. After a moment, he tells me,
"It only explains that the seaweed is found in a secondary cavity that my mother called the volcano."
I shrug and suggest, "Maybe it's just a cavity with a higher ceiling than the others." As we move forward, I continue to tie lengths of Himanthalia together. Time passes. We reach a third cavity, apparently the last one. Unfortunately, the rocks look the same as everywhere else, bare of all plants. The Hedalia must be somewhere, but in this black grotto it doesn't seem possible. To grow, all plants need light, even just a little. But all around here, there's darkness. When Hedda's refuge was abandoned and seaweeds cluttered up the opening and stopped light from coming in, the plants didn't survive. So how can Hedalia still be alive here? I don't want to share my doubts with Vic. Hedda couldn't have made a mistake. A few seconds later, Vic's the one who sighs, and he whispers,
"I think there's nothing to find in this grotto. I don't understand."
Vic has been so confident since the beginning. Now I start to lose hope too. The thing is, we followed the instructions carefully. We mustn't give up now. I declare, we have to keep going. Let's think of Romy. Let's examine the different cavities again. Vic's confidence returns. At that moment, I sense a vibration in the water. Vic has felt it too because he murmurs, "Something's approaching." Warily, we watch the cavity's entrance. Suddenly, a shark appears.
Shark!
Vic cries out and moves backwards. As he does so, his shell strikes the rock wall and shatters into pieces. The glowworms escape. From the last light of the glowworms as they disperse and move away, I make out the shark's profile. Now I know that we have nothing to fear, I tell Vic. It's only a blunt-nosed shark. It's harmless. The grotto refills with gloom and silence. I sigh. Without any light, how can we continue our exploration? I'm not worried about rising back up to the surface because the strips of Himanthalia will guide us back. But we can say adieu to Hedalia. I feel terribly downcast.
It's no use, Vic confirms. I'm so sorry I panicked.
Vic has made such an effort up till now. I can't hold it against him for breaking the shell. Coming closer to him in the dark, I say, hold my hand, I'll guide us to the exit. I feel like crying when I think of Romy. Regretfully, I prepare to turn around when a flash of light pierces through the darkness. I stop moving. Are there a few stray glowworms left?
What's happening?
Vic asks. My eyes are now used to the dark, and I spot at the back of the cavity a ray of light. I stutter, full of hope. Over there! Look! I guide Vic to the back of the grotto. Stones are piled up on top of one another as if there's been a rock slide. Between two rocks, a thin ray of light shines through. There must be another space behind this one, I say excitedly. A cavity with light, where Hedalia can live. My hands shake with excitement. I hook a length of Himanthalia on the side of the rock face. Vic is already trying to push a stone to one side. After a few tries, we finally manage to make one stone slide. Bright light suddenly floods the cave. After a few seconds of astonishment, I slip into the freed space. It's not very big, but sun rays fill it. It's different from the rest of the grotto. It's cluttered with plants. Driven by curiosity, I rise up to the surface. Vic joins me. Incredible! He shouts as we stare at the column of light rising up to the sky. Above our heads is a tall, wide chimney. I remember the island I saw, and I realize we're inside the volcano. This is where Hedalia is found. Vic smiles at me. His confidence is back. Time for action, he says. Chapter 5. Caught in a Net. I'm familiar with some of the plants found in the grotto. Sea lettuce, forkweed. There's also life dwelling among the plants. Small, colourful fish swim in tight rows between kelp leaves. I hold a hand out to them. Terrified, they dart off to hide behind a stone. But one of them, more curious than the others, approaches and brushes against my skin. Barely have I moved my fingers when it flees. Amused, I watch it leave, when suddenly a long line of pinkish plants stretches towards me. I widen my eyes. I want to be sure before I cry victory. I stretch out my hand and touch the plant. It's soft, and the little hairs on it tickle my fingers. In a low voice, I recite the description of Hedalia. Flat seaweed, pink in colour, rolled up like a fan, edged with short hairs. It's right here! I found it! Vic! I call Vic excitedly and show him my discovery. He cheers and we laugh with joy. We found the remedy. Gently, using the tools that Vic has brought, I cut several Hedalia from the rock. Vic slips them gently into his pouch. At that moment, the brightness in the grotto dims. I look towards the surface. Up above, the sun has started its descent. I warn Vic, "We need to get back." We spent too long searching. I find my Himanthalia guide rope where I left it. Then hand in hand we head towards the grotto's exit. A few minutes later, I feel in my hand the very first knot that I tied at the entrance. I'm confident as I announce, "All that's left to do now is to get back to the Gulf Stream." In the darkness, we swim straight up to the surface. The seaweed in Varrick Forest soon tickles our bodies, and a few prawns let us take advantage of the bluish light that they radiate. Finally, I stick my head out of the water, closely followed by Vic. By the look of the sun's position, it's already late afternoon. "If we don't dawdle, then we still have a chance to get back before sunset," I say. Suddenly, we feel vibrations to our right. I turn my head and open my eyes wide in alarm. A hull glides over the water. I can see a glassed cabin in front and an enormous winch at the back.
"A fishing boat!"
screams Vic. "That's why we weren't supposed to come here. We need to flee right away." But my body stays petrified as I face this sea monster. Thankfully, Vic snatches my hand and pulls me down, forcing me to dive. I react at last. Underwater, I see the outline of a wide fishing net coming dangerously close. Vic drags me towards the sea floor, but our progress is cut off by a gigantic school of mackerel violently hurtling towards us. I let go of Vic's hand. Dazed with shock, I don't move when the flow of fish carries me away. A din of boat engines rumbles around me. Finally, I pull myself together again. After I thrash my tail energetically a few times, I manage to exit the crowd. But there's no sign of Vic. The fishing net approaches again, already filling up with fish. I'm wild with fear when I call out, "Vic, where are you?" Suddenly, I notice his hand sticking out of the moving mass of mackerel. Could he be unconscious? I get ready to grab his fingers to pull him out, but at the same moment, the net brushes against me and closes around the school of fish. Vic is trapped inside.
Chapter 6. Wounded.
I need a miracle, and it had better come fast. Just don't panic. I gaze all around. Only the fiery peak stands out a few meters away. Its sharp summit gives me an idea. I go closer to the peak, and when the net passes over me, I grab hold of it and pull with all my might so that it snags on the volcano's rocky walls. The weight of the net throws me against the rock and my arms get scratched. But I don't let go. I have to hold on. The net stops drifting, and then the rock's sharp contours begin to slice through the mesh. "Vic!" I cry out. "Can you hear me?" A stifled call reaches me.
"Stella! I'm stuck!"
The first lacerated strings of the net finally give way. Under the pressure of fish escaping, my tail knocks hard against the jagged rock, and pain crosses the lower part of my body. With so much going on, I simply move away from the rock without even checking if I'm injured.
"Vic!"
I call out again. Over here! The net is torn! Trembling, I watch for him to come out. Suddenly, the net breaks free from the rock. I understand that it's now moving back up to the surface. The fisherman must have realized that something was wrong. Then Vic finally emerges from the school of fish. Phew! I heave an enormous sigh of relief. I've just rescued my new friend. Above us, the fishing net, torn and almost empty, finishes its trip upwards. Are you okay? I ask Vic. Are you hurt? I look at him. His arms and stomach are covered with grey and red smudges.
My skin is burning a bit after rubbing against the fish, but I'm fine.
Actually, his tattoo is fading. Grey smudges blend with the redness of his irritated skin. I can't keep down a smile and poke fun at him gently. It looks like your real tattoo is vanishing. He rolls his eyes.
Okay, then. Maybe I exaggerated a bit. It might possibly just be seaweed dye.
We start giggling. Then more seriously, he says to me,
Thanks, Stella, for saving my life.
Thinking back to the moment when he dragged me down into the water as the boat approached, I simply reply, Thanks to you, too. Seeing my scratches, Vic asks me,
Are you hurt?
I'm on the verge of replying that it's nothing much when a movement bothers me. I look down at my tail and notice a wound, several centimetres long. All of a sudden, the pain returns, and when I try to shake my tail, I admit, I think that I'm going to have trouble swimming.
I'll help you,
Vic offers. So hand in hand, we continue on our way.
Chapter 7. A New Adventure.
The return journey isn't easy. My wound hurts. Fortunately, Vic helps me keep going. We cross the stony scales without trouble, and when we get back to the gentle warmth of the Gulf Stream, I feel more confident. Several minutes before we reach our destination, my heartbeat accelerates. I hope that Romy has been hanging in there. When at last we arrive by my cousin's side, I cry out, We found it, Romy! Vic and I have the remedy! Lying down, my cousin looks exhausted. But when she looks at me, I see a glimmer of hope in her eyes. I knew that I could count on you two, she confides. Vic quickly takes a few pieces of her dahlia. Ilium disease will soon be nothing more than a bad memory. Romy is saved. A few weeks go by, my cousin has finally recovered her strength. After the Hedalia treatment, it took several days for the paralysis to disappear entirely. I'm so thrilled to see her smiling again. Meanwhile, my wound has healed. And now that the mermaids have the remedy to Ilium disease, I'll soon go home to the North Seas. This time, I'm going to miss Romy and Vic dreadfully. I'm already planning to come back and see them as soon as I can. We savour every moment that we spend together. One day, while Romy and I are enjoying the heat of the sun, a splash suddenly takes us by surprise. Vic's head emerges from the middle of some rocks. As soon as he spots us, he shouts,
I was looking for you everywhere. I've just received a super important message from the Bureau of the Sages.
Romy and I look at one another, unsure what this is about. Vic continues,
They're going to honour Mum posthumously and award her the status of Grand Explorer Scientist, who advanced research and made a highly significant contribution to the marine world.
My cousin and I cry out, Wow! In admiration. It's perfectly right for his mother's work to be recognised. However, Even if the Hedalia remedy is a huge step forward, it unfortunately doesn't solve the problem of pollution in the oceans. Which gets me thinking, are there plants that can capture pollution? Romy and Vic both give me an inquisitive look. I continue and say, I was thinking, Vic, if you agree, we could put your mother's refuge back in service and grow plants that help clean the ocean. Of course, less pollution would be the best, but we can also do what we can to fight it. Let's multiply seaweeds that are useful to our environment and then set out to plant them in areas where pollution is heavy. Maybe this way we can reduce disease. Romy replies with a huge grin. That's a fantastic idea, Stella. What do you think, Vic? Vic looks at me and stutters with emotion.
I'd really like to bring Mum's refuge back to life again.
And suddenly he says more perkily,
we can grow our plants in every corner of the ocean. Thanks to this project, we can travel everywhere. We'll become marine environment heroes.
I snigger. Vic, you're getting carried away. And winking back at me, he says,
well, obviously a chicken like you will never dare to go on an adventure.
I prod him gently to shut him up. In an authoritative tone, he adds,
but don't worry, girls. With me, you'll be safe.
Remy and I burst out laughing. Vic, really? Show off one day, show off forever. The end.